As we began Sesshin, we are reminded of the Sesshin precautions. Non-talking, non-looking around, non-social interactions, courtesies. And we're reminded of these because Sesshin is designed, if I say, to allow us to deepen our being practice, being not knowing, being the intimacy of experiencing, which, if I say it a different way, is being non-abiding. What we usually do in our life, especially when we get caught up in thoughts, in talking, in judging, in looking around, and getting ideas of self and other, is abiding in all sorts of things. And by doing that, we miss the experiencing that nurtures our life. An interesting analogy could be to heating water in order to get it to come to a boil. If we're heating water and then we turn the flame off for a little in order to think about this and then turn the flame back on and then start looking over there and turn the flame down a little more and then turn it back on. If we sit and then get up and then start engaging in our thinking about what am I going to do and why, what does this mean? Or even in the middle of sitting, doing that. Turning it on, turning it off, turning it on, turning it off. Though we might apply lots of heat to the water never gets to boil, never gets to steam, never gets to turn to vapor. Of course, water not boiling is fine. It's still water. Turning to steam is fine. It's not better, it's not worse. Except that if you're trying to get the water to boil, you never get it to boil by constantly turning it off and turning it on and turning it off, turning it on. Though you do apply heat, all the heat that you apply and that starts building up dissipates, is lost when we do all sorts of things, when we get caught up in our mind chatter, when we get caught up in fears and anger and worries. Now, there is no need to boil water. Water is not better if it's boiled, if it's vapor, whether it's ice or water vapor or steam or all or anything else. It's all forms of H2O. Yet, if we're trying to boil water, if we're trying to sense the water that we are, the H2O that we are, then turning the heat on and off in all sorts of ways will counteract any of the heat that we're putting on the water. Now, this is just an analogy because practice, if we call it attentiveness or awareness or experiencing, is not something extra we need to do to water in order to be water. It's always who we are, except that our habits of believing, thinking, of sticking to and attaching to all sorts of things means that we miss who and what we are. If we say it a different way, the being present of heating water is being always changing present moment, or it's being this non-abiding or abiding nowhere. That's what enables us to be this moment as is. This moment of our life and responding to it. Just like fire or experiencing is the always changing. Fires aren't abiding, sticking anywhere, holding on to things. At least none that I know of. You might know fires that are. But the fire that is who we are is this abiding nowhere, this not knowing of experiencing, this not knowing of the present moment. So, in the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha says, abiding nowhere, mind comes forth, or bring forth mind, or bring forth heart mind. The word mind in English, unfortunately, tends to be connected with thinking and analysis and so forth. So in one sense, the Chinese character and even the Sanskrit character can be translated better as heart-mind, but heart-mind is still a problem because, for one thing, it's a mouthful and it's not really an English word. I mean, those are words in English, but the expression is a strange expression. So usually this phrase is translated as abiding nowhere, mind comes forth. Or it's translated as an imperative, bring forth mind, bring forth heart mind. Abiding nowhere. And yet, when we abide in all sorts of places, the fire of the heart, mind, present moment can't come forth and can't be tasted and experienced by ourselves because of the abiding. Because of the looking around, because of the thinking about and talking to all sorts of thoughts and people and ourself in all sorts of ways, inside and outside. Of course, the way the fire burns, so to speak, in Zazen is different than the fire of experiencing when we're in the midst of talking with people and being present. No problem with talking to people. No problem with walking and doing our work or doing all sorts of things. All of those are opportunities of abiding nowhere, bringing forth this heart mind, this, if I say experiencing, if I say attentiveness. All the daily circumstances of our life are this opportunity. Not in a stereotyped way, could be concentrated, could be an opening, depends on the circumstances. But all of these allow the water of our life to manifest. Again, ice, water, vapor, steam, and any other variation. They're only forms of this H2O that we are. And yet, despite being this, we don't sense who we are. Therefore, in order to sense who we always are, being practice, being experience, allows us, not creates something new, not takes us somewhere else, but always allows us to be exactly what we are and to not be distracted, disrupted, fooled, deluded into believing who we are because of where we're abiding. Excuse me. Some of you might remember a while ago I talked about the Song of Zazen by Hakuin Zenji, which begins, sentient beings are primarily Buddhas. It is like ice and water. Outside water can't find any ice. Outside sentient beings can't find Buddhas. That's sort of a loose translation. Excuse me for doing it that way. In a way, what's fundamental for us as we start this session is to know what it is we're doing, what it is that's skillful to do, and what it is that's not skillful to do. Which is why I'm starting with this. It's not skillful to turn water on and off. Excuse me, to turn the heat under the water on and off if we're trying to boil water. You could do it all day. You could apply 10 hours of heat to water and still not get it to boil. 10 hours of fire to water if the rest of the time in a 24 or 48 hour period, you don't have the heat being applied. because you turn it on, you turn it off, you turn it on, you turn it off, the water heats up a little and then cools down and heats up and cools down and heats up and cools down. Oh, fine. Cool water is fine. You can sense and taste the water even when it's cool. In fact, from the beginning, every one of us is only Buddhas. And yet, we don't sense it and taste it in our daily life because we believe the stories. We believe the talking and reacting to talking, the looking around and attachments about what we see inside, outside. All the judgments that we hold on to. So in a sense, this session is an opportunity to have the consistent, ever-changing, non-abiding heat of being, experiencing, being present. In a way, I say consistent, non-abiding, those two seem almost opposite, and yet exactly who we are is abiding nowhere. It's exactly who we are when we aren't caught up in self-centered thinking, aren't holding to self-centered thoughts. Then we can be the heart mind that comes forth. We can bring forth in our very functioning exactly who we are. So I want to start this way, and maybe we can talk a little to clarify this. This abiding nowhere, bring forth heart mind, is the beginning of a theme that I'll pick up. This is from the Diamond Sutra, as some of you know, and it continues in different ways throughout Zen practice and Zen teaching. Not just Zen, Buddhist. It's in a way an encapsulating of the wisdom sutras, the Prajnaparamita, of expressing this ongoing, changing Buddha life that we are, Buddha nature that we are, this impermanent non-self that, in a way, expresses the reality of our life, which is the life of the awakened Buddha. And yet, we don't see it and we miss it. So that's our opportunity in sitting together and practicing together. So I will stop here since we're just starting session, and maybe we can clarify this a little more. Yes?
What is that?
Abiding means staying one place. It's like there's a word abode means a house. So it's like sticking to something. In a way, it's another, well, it's not quite the same word, but it's when we say caught is another way of being abiding. So in one sense, abiding is fine, in a sense, abiding is wonderful. Always abide right where you are. But in another sense, if you're abiding in here, but you're on campus, then you're neither here nor there, because you're stuck between two places. If you're abiding in some ideas about what someone is saying to you, then you can't hear what they're saying to you, because that blinds you and filters what. If you're abiding in ideas of how this food should taste, then no matter what you put in your mouth, no matter what your tongue experiences and transmits to your brain, you're having something that's filtering and keeping away the experience of the present moment. And given that the present is always ongoing change, is always changing this experiencing, it's always moving, and yet, if I abide in some things, if I know what things are supposed to be, then I can't see what things are. I can't even sense what I am. In Zen practice, sometimes, you might have seen this, there's expressions like, I used it earlier, don't know mind, or the expression, Zen mind, beginner's mind. So if we're truly a beginner, then we don't know until we begin and see what's so. Begin and sense what's this moment. Now, of course, we could do, as I said, on the other hand, you could always say abiding exactly where you are. If you want to do a play on word, when you say abiding nowhere, it's also about abiding now here. Now here, now here. But now here is ever changing. Now here is ongoing changing. So, in one sense, abiding nowhere means you step into the river wherever it is. But you know that no matter where you step in the river, it's never the same place that you stepped in yesterday or even 5 minutes ago, because it's always this ongoing change in permanence. Now, of course, I'm mixing metaphors, and we can get into all sorts of trouble when we mix metaphors. But
the three, first and third, always for me.
The first and third what?
Well, non-talking and non-socializing.
Yes.
Non-talking, non-looking around, and non-socializing.
Or non-social courtesies.
The first and third have always seemed fairly obvious to me. I mean, you know, the second one, not so much. Not looking around. I mean, what does that mean? And it seems, after practicing this long, it seems to me that it's talking about a kind of restlessness, a distraction.
Okay.
That's
one aspect, in the sense when you're looking around, you're saying, I'm not able to or satisfied with being where I am. I have to look for something else. And another aspect is that when we're looking around, we're separating ourselves from circumstances and looking at what's there. What's there? What's there?
That's the distraction.
That's the distraction. It's also treating, whether it's outside or inside, treating aspects of our life as objects for us to look at and think about and chew about. And so it's looking around and saying, oh, well, what about that, huh? It's looking around to get away from where I am in order to look for. Now remember, these are all English expressions and they carry with them for each of us different connotations and denotations. Mm-hmm. But we all know very well that if we're sitting still or even walking or doing a task and we start looking around, we are distracted. We're moving away from where and how we are, or where and what we're doing, and all of a sudden our attention goes elsewhere when we're looking around. Even that expression, our attention goes elsewhere, indicates what's happening. That much, in a sense, we're taking, to go back to the other analogy, we're turning the fire off for a little bit so I could pay attention to something else. And in a sense, then the broad presence becomes looking at something and then missing the rest of our life for that moment. Not only that, but also having an agenda. When we look around, we usually have an agenda. I'm looking for something, or I want to see something about that, or even if the agenda isn't completely, or even if it's saying, I'm bored with the way it is, that already is an agenda. I need to look around for something. You know, when if you think of being a child in a classroom, when you're bored, you start looking around. When you're reading a book, and you start looking around. When you're with someone and you start looking around. When you're eating food and you start looking, well, what's going to be next? All of that is not being where you are. And all of that, in a sense, feeds the mind that's always grasping, searching, grasping, judging. All judging is fine if your judging is right here, what you're judging. But when you're looking around, you're not even judging what you're judging. Mm-hmm. So that's the sense how I hear the word looking around, or non-looking around. I would hope if you're walking somewhere, you're looking where you're walking.
Or driving.
Or driving. But even in the simple sense of it just walking kinhin in the Zendo, or looking at the food that you're, when you're picking up your ryoki, or cleaning, or whatever. But if you're moving your feet and looking somewhere else, it's very easy to stub your toes, or to kick someone, or whatever, because you're looking around. So that's how I hear, I'm looking around.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. Well, they're all three kind of really the same thing in a way. I mean,
yes,
yeah.
In one sense, except
very fundamental sense, they're all being out of this present moment.
Well, or
I mean, there are times when you know, talking and socializing are good things. Looking around is something we need to do, but in a practice context session, we tend to use those as a way to avoid being present.
Yeah, and looking around is just looking around. However, if what we're doing is being present, being moment of sesshin, then it's not the looking around, it's the whole aspect of what we're doing then that in a sense this takes us away from this ongoing sesshin, which in one sense is just one single thing, one single ongoing thing, if we want to say it. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's not one single thing. That's the abiding nowhere. As soon as we make it into a thing, then it becomes something else. And as soon as we make it into a thing, it becomes something separate from our present moment experiencing. It becomes a thing I'm doing. So then there's I'm doing a thing. So we need to be not be trapped by words, but see the point, because practice isn't words. Practice is this life experiencing, whether we call it fire or water or anything else. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yoan.
Two things. In the convent, we have something called custody of the eyes.
Custody of the eyes.
Yeah. Huh. And when you walk down the hall and someone was coming this way, you had to stop and say, "Praise be to Jesus." And you weren't supposed to look at the person.
Okay. So, in other words, custody of the eyes means don't look around at that person.
Yeah. I never understood that. I always resented having to stop say that. But in this context, in a sense, it was almost like saying, "Hello, Buddha," or something. You know, I could do that now, but boy, then.
Well, you could. The custom is to bow to people when you bow, meet them.
Not in the convent.
Well, but in a Zen convent, the line is when you're bowing. In a sense, you're bowing to who? Who's bowing to who? It's Buddha bowing to Buddha, if we say that, which means just bowing. As opposed to getting caught up in who that person is, with this, which is what non-custody of the eyes is, if there is such a thing, non-custody of the eyes, custody of the eyes, huh? See, the expressions are just expressions to support us. If we can't see how they support our practice, then the expressions become traps. They become new rules and new rigidities and things that we don't like. The point of talking is not for you to remember any particular words or form, but to be supported in your practice of, if you want to say, I'll use the image again, of keeping the heat to the water of your present moment life. But don't get caught in that image, otherwise make all sorts of trouble and you think that, oh, when I get it to boil, that's good, but right now it's not good or it's lacking now, and then you're looking, trying to get something, which is troublesome, or can be troublesome. Yeah, you said two things.
Yeah, the second... going to the nursing home, and now I'm going to Amber Glynn, which is Alzheimer's patient. And I'm thinking about...
Going to visit.
To visit.
Okay.
Who knows? Maybe the non-abiding, because, and I remember this with Mother, they're losing their sense of self. They're losing the ego. They're losing... everything.
Right.
And it is a kind of non-abiding.
Yes.
Until, whatever energy is left is no more.
Yes.
And to be there and just notice this non-abiding, it's in different stages for different people, different ways of handling it. And seeing the families, the ones that can go with this. The woman that I'm seeing now, her son comes every day, and sometimes we're there at the same time. And he was so gentle with her. She was saying something like that, "Well, this afternoon I want to go such and such a place," and it was something she was saying. And he said, "Oh, Mom, we'll do it later on today." Going along with her non-abiding. Then there are other people, and I remember at an Alzheimer's meeting once, somebody got up and said, "I could never tell a white lie to my mother." And I thought, ooh. People non-abide with their loved ones. And you just went with that.
And the other aspect is, even though there is some of that sense when cognitive functions diminish, change, there's sometimes also great agitation about it for the individual, because there's a sense of loss and ideas and great pain and difficulties, because there's something, a sense of something being missing, And that causes all sorts of agitation and
mother had that.
And behavioral problems too sometimes.
Yeah.
So we have to be careful not glamorizing.
Oh, I don't mean to glamorize.
But yes, these are all opportunities to see
so
where
much.
We get.
Yeah.
How do we be with these many stages of what it is to be human, and some of them happen when one is a child, and some of them repeat or happen in different forms when one, as one ages.
Yeah.
And noticing how it is for us when we're with someone in that stage, and how it's difficult for us when we're with someone in that stage. See, in a way, these are practice opportunities, if I say it in such a way. Some of them we put ourselves into, and some of them life puts us into, whether we choose it or not. And how we are in there, how we bring forth heart, mind, or compassion, there is really what our practice is, being just this moment, compassion's way. If we can, that's our opportunity. In a way, I'll talk about that another day in session, so I don't want to step on my lines, otherwise I have nothing to talk about, or I'll have to come up with more.
Excuse me.
Yes. Okay, I can.
I know you couldn't see me. But it seems like what you were saying about the looking stuff, that there's a difference between just looking and looking for something.
Yes.
And I have a very difficult time, just looking. Although I can look for stuff all the time, and there's no limit. I mean, I don't feel like I'm at all confined, that's not a problem. But just looking is difficult.
Well, isn't that basic Zazen posture instructions? We keep our eyes open and we see what's in front of us. So we're looking right here, but we're not looking at or for anything. If we look for something specific in front of us, then what happens is we cause all sorts of strain for ourselves, for our eyes, for our body, maybe even worse than just strain. Sometimes that kind of concentrated looking at something, it could be a form of practice, but it could also lead to what's called makyos, or all sorts of delusions, hallucinations, because of the strain of looking at, in that concentrated way, looking at, or looking for, or looking around, in that sense. So, yeah. And it's fine if you notice all sorts of difficulties with it. That's the opportunity to see what's the practice there. What are you holding on to? What are you caught up about it? The fact that habit occurs isn't the problem. Problems aren't the problem. Problems are simply just the opportunity. And if you're sensitive to looking around, then you can start sensing what it is that you're adding on to the looking around. What you're believing about what you're looking for. To switch themes for a moment, if you remember, once upon a time I brought up an old country western song called Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places. I don't know if it's Patsy Cline or someone else, but it doesn't make a difference. If you look for something specific in all the wrong places, then you never see what's right here, right in front of you. If you look for specific things, maybe you'll find them. Of course, if you're looking for a certain type of screw in a drawer of screws, then, you know, you need to be looking for something. But if as you are functioning, you keep looking for things, that could hinder your ability to see what's in front of you and to take care of what's needed to be taken care of. That can cause added strain, added reactions, added pain, added trouble. Because then you can't see what's right in front of you. If you're with someone and you're looking for them to say A, B, C, then you can't hear the rest of what they're saying. And you could become upset because they haven't said A, B, C, even though they might have said Q, X, R, D, etc., etc. But you didn't hear any of those because you keep on looking for them to say A, B, C in the ways that you think they're supposed to say A, B, C. Yeah.
I usually come for just part of Seixing, and so, in a good way, you become entangled with all your friends here.
Who's you?
Myself.
Oh, I've become entangled with all.
I think we all become entangled with.
Yes.
Getting to know one another a little bit, and
yes,
a little bit about each other, and maybe you haven't seen the person since last Seixing or talked to them, and so you just want to exchange some words or say, you know, is your house put back together after the fires? Or
uh-huh.
And that's one thing, if you can't come for the end, that it's difficult to, you know, maintain non-talking completely and leave and then never get to catch up, so to speak. So that's a motivation for cheating for me, I'll say.
Well, you could come before Seixing.
Yes.
You could come an hour before, and that way you can catch up before you start, if you feel the need for that. But in a sense, Seixing, despite the desire to socialize in Seixing, it's poisonous for you and it's poisoning for others. And it's a wonderful opportunity to notice that desire. Fine, be that. But know that that's not what we're doing in Seixing. Know that that, in a sense, takes away from your richness of life during Seixing. So despite the temptation, there's all sorts of temptations, and those temptations are self-generated. They arise. Great. I mean, we could have all sorts of temptations while we're sitting. Wow, that's an interesting song that car's playing out there. You know, I really need to remember. What am I going to do to remember that I want to get that song? All sorts of temptations, because this attachment, this self-centered attachment, always keeps popping up when there's opportunities. And there's no problem with it, except that it blinds us to our life if we hold on to it. Yeah?
Could I say one other thing?
Sure.
It seems as people become more centered, they become aware of what other people are doing.
Yes.
I think you used the term functioning as a whole.
Yes.
So you'll find someone saying, oh, I knew you were going to need that. I'm already preparing it for you. But in a way, that seems like it's thinking about other people and looking around.
No. So
what would you like to say about the difference?
It's not thinking about, it's being present and sensing. That's what's needed, and you just do it. We don't have to figure out how we sense and know. It's just like, for instance, when you need to use the bathroom, when you need to, excuse me for being crude, need to take a piss, you know it. You don't have to go look around and figure out, do I need to or don't I? Until, you know, that function isn't working in you, and then maybe you need to use a clock or a timer or something. But you naturally know it. In being present, you're present as the whole of the Zendo, as the whole of the being. And therefore you naturally sense when it's appropriate to take care of what needs to be taken care of.
But there's a certain amount of cognitive function. Like as I was sitting, I was like, okay, well, I need to keep track of what's going on in the kitchen because I'm temporarily in charge.
Yes.
So you're...
But you don't have to think about it.
Well, you kind of do.
Well, in a way you do and in a way you don't. You could put it on the back burner, and the process of being human means that when it comes up, you just know that after the third period of sitting, I get up and do that, or after the second period, I get up. You don't have to keep telling yourself, I need to remember to get up after the second period. I need to remember to get up.
Oh, I do.
Well,
because I'll get into sitting and burn the rice up. Whereas maybe Ed, but I have to keep my mind on it because it'll just go away.
Well, see what you could do. Explore it. There's an aspect of turning our trust over to the natural functioning of being present. Just like you don't have to make sure that you keep breathing in and out. You don't have to make sure of that. And yet, there are times when people put added effort into simple things, even like breathing. I got to remember to breathe. I got to remember to be attentive when I stand up. Okay, as a supportive in the beginning, or at certain times, we need to make that extra effort. Just like we repeat the session precautions at the beginning of every session to remind us. Doesn't mean everyone needs them, but it reminds and clarifies us. But we don't have to keep telling ourselves, don't look around, don't talk. I've heard it. And for most of us, the functioning of being human means that we're capable of doing that. And finding supports that will enable and remind us to do that. Just like when we go to our seat and we bow to our seat, in a way it's reminding us of what we're doing here. So that bowing is an opportunity of bringing ourselves together and being here. So you have to see what's useful and skillful for you and what's extra thinking and looking around or talking. I can't decide for you. You can decide for you. So you might be right. You might have to put a little piece of paper at the edge of your cushion to remind you that after the next period, I have to get up and because you haven't done this before. Fine, do that. You find what's skillful. But also be aware of what's not skillful. So, if you're boiling water and you're going to get on the phone, you might know, okay, I've got to turn the heat off because I have a tendency to get on the phone and just to talk and talk and talk. And then the water will boil, and then the pot will boil, and then I'll even have a fire. So, good. You turn it down or turn it off. Fine. But you also know that if you turn it down or turn it off, you're not going to have boiled water afterwards. So you've got to come back and turn the flame back on. So.
You know, I think of these as gifts. I generally think of them as gifts, as guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And when people are following them, there does seem to be an opportunity that doesn't exist when they're not being followed. That way. Near the end of the sesshin, sometimes somebody will, particularly somebody going to be leaving early, they might come over to me and ask me a personal question. And I might say, well, you know, maybe we'll talk about that after sesshin, or maybe I'll call you or whatever. I may just. But sometimes that's a piece where how to disengage in a way from people's, I think, sincere expression of interest.
Yes.
And I see this with other people too, even when I'm in sesshin, people talking, and I think there's probably something very sincere going on there. However, what is a skillful way for people to say, you know, not now?
Yes. Good. So that's a good practice question. What is a skillful way to respond to circumstances? And I won't give a rule, because I think it skillfulness grows out of your being present and seeing who and what and when and where. So, and it's the same whether it's at home or here. What is skillful? I mean, you could say who, what, when, and where are good guidelines. In other words, seeing what's skillful in terms of who and who the person is, when is it occurring, at what time, what else is happening, where is it occurring, who, what, when, where, and, well, I don't remember what the fourth
how.
Is. How. In other words, what's and how are they doing it, and how is a skillful way for you to do it? Yeah. So, yes, that's good, not to have a rule and to be, therefore, it comes out of being present. Being present means noticing when there is attachment and how to, in a sense, not become attached to the attachment, or not to become trapped by the arising attachment. How to not become trapped by ideas about who you or that person is. Now, how not to become caught up in what you want from them or don't want from them or have ideas about them. So, yes, that's exactly what our practice is. In a sense, sesshin is a simplified form of our life, but at the same time, sesshin has a primary goal of deepening and enriching our ongoing practice in a concentrated way, which is different than ordinary functioning, and therefore it has different guidelines, so to speak. Lisa?
The third, could you say a little something about the third precaution that may seem obvious, and I'm not totally sure that I understand. And if I do, I think I do a little bit, and then this maybe goes along with what Faye was saying a little bit. When if I follow that, then it feels rude.
Well,
in a way.
For instance.
Because people still expect the social gestures.
It depends.
Even though the precaution is
it depends who they are.
Or maybe that's my fear, that they do, and so if I don't do it, that they're going to, you know, take offense or something.
So if you're leaving at night and there's someone else who's putting on their shoes, you've put on your shoes and you're walking out, you don't have to turn around and say goodnight to them. You normally would, acknowledging that they're there and that you're departing, but in sesshin, there's no need for that. If they hold open the door as you, or they walk out and then hold it open for you to walk out, you don't have to say thank you, even though that's normal.
I assume that. I just wanted to make sure I was clear on it. And so, you know, it goes so against the normal way that for me it can be difficult.
What seems so-called normal is fine, but is also different than the normal of sesshin.
Yeah. I mean, I understand, I think, its purpose. It does serve a purpose in it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Okay. I'll speak for now. Thank you all. Please use what I say that's useful, and don't worry about remembering any of it or agreeing, disagreeing, or anything. Just let it come, let it go, let it resonate or not. The point is to what our speaking together, my speaking, is to support and nurture and enhance our practice together in sesshin. And the point of sesshin is to enable us to be this unified mind heart that comes forth out of abiding nowhere. Thank you.